Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hi, this is Mary Robson. Today, it is a beautiful fall day, even if it's raining where you are. We will be talking about birds during this wonderful Nature Now show. But first, the mystery sound, very familiar. I've been seeing them crossing the road. So for some observations here, Christy is going to help me. We have Christy Lassen here from Birds Unlimited. She's going to help with the observations. My first one is signs of fall, which are everywhere. There's the handsome common snowberry in full white berries, and a good place to observe these is South Discovery Road near Cape George Road. The harvest comes to all the native plants as well as to our abundant fall markets. This is the time of abundance.
Anna's hummingbirds are zipping around the garden edges. Not all of them are heading to Mexico for the winter. There is a large population that settles in for the winter and fall in our areas. Last year's sub-freezing temperatures were pretty extreme, below freezing every night from January 22nd through March 10th. It stressed a lot of the birds and a lot of the people, I think, too, out here. And it was very hard on the Anna's population. They start early nesting in January, and I'm not 100% sure on the statistics of it, but not a lot of those early nests survive.
And it was interesting keeping track because we very seldom have a stretch that long with below freezing temperatures. Because of the topic of our interview today with Christy, we are going to consider bird protection. We are going to be talking together about the results of the study that was released last week on where birds are in North America. And we have two considerations here on bird protection. The first is that there is a pending decision on the marbled murrelet. Washington State has worked for 20 years to make a decision on land preservation for the marbled murrelet, a bird with a tricky lifestyle. The adults live at sea, but they nest inland on large timber branches, producing one egg a year. Old loggers named them foglarks for their early morning arrival from the sea with fish for their nestlings. The Department of Natural Resources has needed effort to balance the needs of counties, cities, and the birds. This resulted in recommendation of Option H of the release of acreage previously held from away from timber harvest, but they also will have the consideration of considerable acreage held for the bird. The Board of Natural Resources, which met October 1st, will formally select a final conservation strategy. Do you want me to do that one just over?
There are efforts to protect great blue heron's nesting sites in Bellingham as well. Residents are pushing the city to protect Bellingham's only great blue heron nesting site by providing undeveloped land near the bird's colony and creating a reserve for them. The colony is at the edge of Fairhaven in a forested strip owned by the city of Bellingham. Birds and environmental groups, including the North Cascades Audubon Society, have signed petitions, written letters, and met with officials to propose buying the land and creating the reserve. And that's thanks to the SATO report for this, which is the Salish Sea News and Weather.
Salish Sea News and Weather. It's a
nice
terrific
blog.
Comes daily. I'll be talking here with Christy Lassen. I'm very happy. And her voice, I'm sure, is familiar to many of you because we have talked quite often, but we have seldom talked about the subject that is with us today. Usually we get to choose a bird we like and explore it in detail to every feather. Today we are going to be talking about the scientific study which was done and released last week about the loss in bird population over the last time since 1970. So that's about 50 years. Christy, let's leap in here. Who did this study and how long do you know they worked on it, or how does this go?
So the big hitters in it were Cornell Lab of Ornithology, the American Bird Conservancy, the National Wildlife Research Center, the Canadian Wildlife Service, and the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. Those were sort of the big hitters in it.
And those are people whose credibility is not something you would want to challenge.
They're putting in the effort, absolutely, yeah, to make sure that they know what's going on with our world and our environment. The bird species that they counted were 529 different species of birds.
Okay.
And they did the count from 2006 to 2015. A lot of research went into this, a lot of focus. There was also a continent-wide weather radar network of 143 stations across the United States, and they studied birds from 2007 to 2018, which revealed a similarly steep decline in the biomass passage of migrating birds over the last 10-year period.
Well, so the implication is that they actually weren't studying back to 1970. They were looking roughly at a decade since 2000.
The main numbers that they're talking about, like that there's a 2.9 billion bird decline in our population since 1970, has been an ongoing study that they've included reports on bird counts and things like that from the 1970s. But then there was a couple of specific studies done between 2006 and 2015 with the 529 species and then the Doppler radar stations.
Wow.
Research too.
It's a staggering number. Breeding adult birds are the ones that they're saying are lost. They're not counting nestlings or grandpa or these are 2.9 billion breeding adult birds.
A decline of that since 1970.
And this is birds who are seabirds, birds who live in forests, birds on prairies. It's not to one particular location.
No, it's across the board. They say it's in every ecosystem that this change is happening.
They're beginning to get the news out. One of the things was that the people who took the study and did it were surprised.
Yeah. I think so. I think that everybody kind of has a microscopic sort of view of the birds, of you see what you see and you see what's in your backyard. And they seem like they're doing okay, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we may notice small changes and fluctuations when you get it on a grand scale like this long of a period of time across the United States and into Canada, too.
Yes.
The revelation of what the implications of it are much bigger.
Roughly, so this then crosses North America.
Yes.
We know then that they studied about 529 species, and we always want on Nature Now to be able to talk about what this means locally. And I know that finding this information is hard. That's one of the difficulties. But we've got this net loss of birds everywhere. But local impacts, I'm curious about what you have been able to find in your many studies of what's disappearing locally.
Locally, the changes that we've seen just in our backyard, because we are pretty observant out there.
Yeah.
You know, we look at our feeders every day. We watch the birds. We show them to customers. We talk about it with a lot of people of what's showing up in their backyard. Definitely, there's a decline in the grosbeak population. People are seeing them in different areas. We've lost our evening grosbeaks at the store. We used to get big flocks of them. There would be 40 that would come in at a time. It started to decline at the store, and we were seeing fewer of them. And then this whole last season, we saw none in our garden in the backyard of the store.
This is the Wild Birds Unlimited location near Squim.
Yep, in Gardner.
I have noticed a few things that seemed less to me, but when you're doing an individual observation, you're not fitting that into this total study. What it is the study is done. They've done what they're doing. And now we need to start looking. And one of the things that we started thinking about was this may not seem as drastic locally because it's fall and a lot of the birds that we tend to really notice and love have migrated. So some of those include the grosbeaks.
Definitely. Grosbeaks are migrating.
Yeah. There's a bunch more though. I missed Swainson's thrush this year. I thought, well, that was just a kind of random accident and they have migrated. And who else is left?
The Rufous hummingbirds are gone. The tanagers have headed south. Bullock's orioles, our swallows, and a lot of the warblers, too, are headed south.
So part of it is that we, as individuals, are not really very well equipped to drag out something that we say, oh, this substantiates the study. We, however, can look at what's around us.
Right.
Okay.
And we can utilize some things out there that are available at different times of the year to help scientists figure things like this out, like the Great Backyard Bird Count. Through the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. There's a couple other studies. They do the Christmas bird count.
Sure.
They do a Project Feeder Watch. There's even a Project Nest Watch that you can get involved in. And I love this term of becoming a citizen scientist. It's my, I think, one of my favorite things in the world of helping observe what's in your backyard and happening and who's showing up and just taking a little notice. And it takes, you know, 20 minutes out of one day to sit and observe and then record those to the websites for the counts. And you can really help be a little part of what the bigger snapshot is.
Sure.
Yes.
And especially with the local situation. My feeling was that we didn't want to come on saying, oh gosh, nearly 3 billion birds have left. Consequently, we're in a bird desert here. We really aren't. But we are beginning to notice some changes.
Definitely. There are some changes.
We do use the movement of birds as seasonal guideposts. At least I do. When I hear the Swainson's thrush, I know it's June and the sky is open and it's absolutely beautiful. I have year-round ravens who talk to each other every morning. And I know that if I didn't hear that, there would be something important not in the day.
My brain works better when I can hear birds sing. It really does. It helps me.
So what kinds of things are available to local people to look at the bird population and keep losses from happening? Because some of it is huge habitat loss.
Definitely. There are lots of things that we can do individually just to help the bird populations. There's a wonderful website that's called 3billionbirds.org. Fantastic information in it. And it's the number 3 and then the word billion birds.
Right.
org. And I would recommend checking that out. It has 7 simple things that people can do to help the bird population. One of the first things that they talk about is helping with window strikes.
Uh-huh.
You know, just locally, yourself, your own house, helping make your windows more bird friendly.
I had a varied thrush hit a window last year, and it was not a happy day.
It's tragic.
It is. And I've noticed that people are beginning to say there are things you can put on that you don't notice, but the birds notice.
Definitely. So one of the things that I always like to tell people is that any kind of modern window anymore has so many coatings on it that if you put something on the inside of the window, on the inside of your house to help like show the birds that there's a window there, they're never going to see it. Because if the sun hits that window, it's just going to reflect back the sky. Nothing will show through on the insides of the windows.
Ah.
So anything you put on the outside of the window will help break up the reflection of what the birds see.
Wow.
And there are some great things that are like UV products.
Mm-hmm.
Birds can actually see ultraviolet light where humans can't. So they just look a little smeary or smudgy to us.
We already have the smears and smudges,
they help the birds. Birds see them as big purple smears and smudgies. Another great thing is don't wash your windows. I'm a big advocate of that it helps break
you
up the reflection.
You heard it here, folks. And another thing that is very, very commonly said is if you have cats, keep them indoors. I have 2 cats, and they do live indoors. One of the reasons is that a bobcat walked through my garden 2 weeks ago, and they need to be inside. But they are also so curious and quick that they can be hard on a bird population.
Definitely. It's their natural instincts. There's not a lot you can do about that with cats. Keeping them indoors makes them live longer, keeps them healthier, helps the bird population.
Even if they're standing at the door complaining that they want to go out. And one of these says, plant native plants. I'm sort of in wall-to-wall salal at my house.
I love it.
But
ditch your lawn.
There are people who are beginning to look at birdscaping the same way we're looking at, say, bee friendliness of our gardens.
Yeah.
And some of those things are going to overlap, which
Definitely.
Is really great.
Or landscaping, you know, just instead of landscape, birdscape. I love it.
A lot of that means planting things that have berries and that birds can enjoy.
Definitely.
Pesticides. I think that people really haven't thought as much as they might about rat poison. Because if you've poisoned a rat, then the animal that might be hunting it or maybe eating it is treated as if it were a rat. It's potentially killed by the product.
Absolutely. There's a tertiary poisoning that happens with rodenticides where the rat eats it and then a predator will eat that rat and then something will scavenge off of what ate the rat too and it poisons 3 different points along the way, which is
This is not saying you have to put up with rats,
no.
But it does say that rat poison is relatively dangerous.
Yep.
And early in the morning, bird-friendly coffee. I had no idea that American songbirds were happily affected by that.
There's definitely bird-friendly options out there. It just takes a little bit of research to find them. There's lots of companies that produce bird-friendly coffee.
Well, I've seen it in stores, and I've tried it myself. So somehow that feels like something kind of comforting in the face of all of these difficulties. And finally, they do suggest what we are doing, which is recycling plastic. Most of us don't need to be reminded, but boy, plastic lasts a long time.
Absolutely. There's a statistic from National Geographic that to date, at least 700 species of marine mammals, including shorebirds, have been entangled by plastic or mistaken it for food. And the result of that is usually suffocation or starvation.
Last of all, I wanted to remind all of us about the book Silent Spring, which had a tremendous impact when Rachel Carson wrote it. It was published in 1962 in The New Yorker. She went to President Kennedy and got him interested in how the United States could work as a community to protect the environment. Got to wondering if she would ever consider that her work in Silent Spring would still be necessary 57 years later. It is. If you haven't encountered the book, it's a very good thing to look at right now. The DDT that she's worried about was discontinued in 1973, but has long, long lifespan. So anyway, if you haven't read Silent Spring or encountered Rachel Carson, this is your opportunity. Thank you, Christy. The chipmunk is our mystery sound. They sound to me like a little motor that got started and didn't know when to stop. But unlike eastern chipmunks, the most common local species, the yellow pine chipmunk, does not hibernate. They gather seeds and nuts to cache during fall in burrows where they retrieve them during the winter. There is an alpine species of chipmunk that endures colder winters and may do some hibernating here. Chipmunks are easy to spot because of the stripes on their bodies, and they're sometimes called hyperactive. They move very fast along with their tail cocked up in the air, and when they're disturbed, they dart into cover right away. They are, by the way, omnivorous. In addition to seeds and nuts, they will eat, unfortunately, birds' eggs, mushrooms, and worms. And they're much smaller than the familiar Douglas squirrel. Finally, a few events.
Saturday, October 5th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., salmon watching with the Jefferson Land Trust. Come on down to the Duckabush Oxbow and Wetlands Preserve, where Blaze Sullivan will be on site, ready to answer any of your salmon or preserve-centric questions. Drop in at any point and say hi.
That sounds fun. And the Olympic Audubon Society is having a backyard birder class. This one is Birding Basics, October 5th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Their classes are so good that you can't attend one without learning something. The last is the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society field trip, October 6th, 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Fort Flagler State Park, which is an interesting place to wander around in. Lots and lots of trails and lots of birds, we hope.
That's it for Nature Now, the first week in October. We've enjoyed bringing you this authentic and eclectic show. Thanks to Mary for hosting, and thanks to Christy Lassen from Wild Birds Unlimited. Nature Now is on at Wednesdays at noon, repeats Thursdays at 5, and Saturdays at 12:30. Thanks for listening. Today's outro music is Los Pájaros Perdidos.